All right, so this is our last class. We only had four on this lovely book, A Guide to the Buddhist Method of No Method Illumination by Rebecca Lee. And I guess this is another announcement. Our precept study begins next week, right? It begins in March. I'm like, how is that possible? Okay. Yes, our precept study begins next week. This will, and I don't teach any of the precept classes this year. So I think there's like 12 total classes, because there's one that's just going to be on like how we practice with the precepts in this lineage, one on the Karmaverse and the refuges, and then there's one class on each one of the 10 grave precepts. And so they're taught, each one of them is taught by a different Sangha member. So it's always a fun time of year to hear from other people's way of relating to the Dharma and experience. We have some good conversations. There is a text this year. It's on the website. So if you go to our practice Tuesday study, it's a book called, I think it's Opening to Oneness by Nancy Mujo Baker. So it's a new precept book. There's several of them out there. Yeah, it's highly recommended. Those presenting on the precepts, though, won't necessarily assume that you have read it. We kind of standalone presentations. So you're welcome to come to class whether you are reading that book or not. So, in terms of this illumination by Rebecca Lee, we haven't had a lot of time to do the book justice because it was wedged right in there between two other series. But we did the first week, we talked about silent illumination, which is another, it's the Chan way of describing our meditation practice. We often say shikantaza or just sitting. Silent illumination is another way to describe that. We talked about how the things that get in the way of our zazen, but also the what causes the suffering in the rest of our lives, are the basic vexations of greed or craving, hate or aversion, and delusion or ignorance. So greed, hate, and delusion is often how it's said. But and then she puts these in terms of different modes. So she has, I think, seven different modes that we fall into, which are essentially manifestations of these different basic vexations. So we've talked about craving mode, she said, aversion mode, trance mode, problem-solving mode, and intellectualizing mode. So we've already talked about those modes. I mean, we could have done probably a whole class on each one. So tonight, we're going to talk about quietism mode, forgetting emptiness mode. And then, basically we have two modes tonight. And then there was a final nice little chapter kind of summarizing what she says, allowing what is and being fully here. So hopefully there'll be plenty of time to discuss. And in working with the modes, I'll just kind of jump ahead a little bit because it certainly applies to tonight's modes as well. Working with the modes are primary, it's primarily about recognizing them, just recognizing, oh, I am caught up in this particular mode, which, and then just noticing, because usually when we notice, we then notice how it causes suffering. And things kind of take care of themselves. Shining the light of awareness on these modes, cultivating curiosity and willingness about being with this, just as this, that, just as that, as she says. And it's funny when I talk about that willingness about about looking at these modes and thinking about another way to be and possibly operating without getting caught up in these modes. This is actually what she doesn't talk about this in this book, but like just make me think about it. This is what in Buddhism we call renunciation. So a lot of times when we hear the word renunciation, we think of the Buddha and he left home, and we think of monks and we think of doing without things and all that. But really, what really matters is when you see that something causes, suffering, are you going to hold on to that? Or are you going to see if there's some way you can put it down or, do a different thing? And, I think many of us can recognize that at a certain point in our lives, we don't want to renounce it, right? We can see this thing is causing us suffering. We can see harboring anger and resentment toward this person is actually causing suffering, but I don't care. I'm going to do it anyway, right? So renunciate, so we can see it, but then we also have to have that willingness to try something different. All right, so quietism. Just read a little bit about how Lee describes this mode. Quietism is suffering created by attachment to a state of nothingness that we mistake for the realization of emptiness. It is the misguided habit of abiding in silence as an absence of thoughts, and at the expense of illumination. And I would add not just thoughts, but feelings and activities and whatever, the absence of anything that we might think of as being kind of noisy or busy or troubling or anything like that. Underlying quietism is an aversion to that which is perceived to be defiled or worldly. It is based on an erroneous view that nirvana is separate from and in opposition to samsara. Nirvana, the achievement of, great peace, spiritual peace, as opposed to samsara, which is the cyclic world of suffering and desire. So seeing those two things in opposition, thinking that enlightenment is separate from life. Careful examination of one's views and the cultivation of right view are crucial for releasing our attachment to quietism. Think about how quietism occurs when we practice. After sitting in meditation for an extended period where we isolate ourselves from daily affairs, we may find ourselves in a peaceful state. In this state, the mind becomes very quiet. There is hardly any thought. The difference can be quite stark if we are used to an active mind with lots of planning, analyzing, and arguing. When we practice in a silent retreat, where we drastically reduce mental stimuli by refraining from social interactions and receiving news from the outside world via email or phone messages, it is normal for the mind to quiet down. In other words, the quiet state of mind is conditioned by isolating ourselves from the world. We get into trouble when we mistake this quiet state of mind for the ultimate state, believing that it is the destination to abide in. With this erroneous view, we may believe that we have achieved silence and thus become unwilling to give it up by opening our awareness to stay with thoughts and feelings, just as thoughts and feelings. So you may or may not relate. People are very different. Some of us have experiences of like still and quiet meditation or states of mind that then we long for. You may think, you've never had the luck of having that quiet state of mind, but you can expand this kind of a attachment to quiet and peace. You can think about other circumstances where perhaps conditions have allowed you to experience this more. Like you're on vacation, like you're, in between jobs, like you are, there's something, or maybe even just while you are sitting, like whatever time you take to meditate, setting everything else aside, or you get to come to the zendo, dirt or cloud, and it's like, it's a special space where you can feel some peace, which of course is lovely. It's wonderful. I mean, we deliberately go on retreat to, because it's a conducive space. We deliberately make a zendo nice and quiet, and it's a conducive space to allowing the mind to become still, more still. But then she's talking about this being like, we think that's what we're going for, is that sense of peace and stillness. And damn all the rest of the stuff that just agitates and gets in the way of that peace and stillness, which is really like conditional peace and stillness. It's peace and stillness that has to do with our circumstances, or maybe our state of mind. Other things can go on, maybe our life circumstances or health issues or whatever. And all of a sudden we're like, oh, we don't have that. We don't have that peaceful state of mind anymore. So you're saying it's quietism when we're attached to a particular kind of absence of thought, absence of any kind of emotion, absence of things. And identifying that as what we really want. She says, incorrect understanding of the practice of silent illumination can trap us in quietism. Master Dahui was particularly critical of what he called perverted silent illumination, which considers wordlessness or the absence of thought as the ultimate principle. He was referring to the tendency to associate silence with the lack of mental activities. This kind of silence is like the absence of ripples on a pond inside a vacuum. There is no moving air that touches the water's surface, nor there are there leaves falling or insects alighting on the pond. The pond is quiet and is also lifeless. In silent illumination, we are fully engaged in life. There is clarity of everything, including thoughts and feelings in the present moment, while our entrenched habit of reacting with vexations is not activated. This non-reactivity is the silence in silent illumination. We can experience powerful emotions, such as sadness upon learning about the death of a loved one. They can be fully allowed, processed, and released without activating the habit of resistance. Without our habitual reactivity, there is no hatred toward what is happening, nor wishing it could be otherwise. Nonetheless, we are fully present with the sadness, with while allowing everything else, be it gratitude, anger, relief, or regret, to be acknowledged, experienced, and released. So in quietism, if we get into quietism mode, we train ourselves to dismiss thoughts and feelings, just thoughts and feelings. So all of these modes can be gross or subtle. So I don't know what people's experience is if you've been reading this and kind of thinking like, oh yeah, I don't do that, or like, because they can sound kind of extreme, kind of like caricatures or something. And yet, like we all do all of these things, some at least sometimes to some extent. For example, this instruction for our form of, which I don't even call it meditation, our form of seated practice. So she Lee got from her teachers, let through, let be, let go. So whatever arises, let it through, let it be, and let it go. For myself, I mean, she explains what is meant by that in the chapters that we read tonight, but I feel like that let go is a little bit too much. It's a little bit like this is something you do. This is something like I said, like last time, like we want to be let through, let go. Like this is all, it's all just so that we can, it's all, that's, it's gonna go. I'm letting you through, I'm letting you be, and then you've got to go. So that little bit of an agenda there, really subtle agenda there, just is probably several of these modes that apply, but certainly this quietism one of like we want to be without that. And we can all kind of nod and go like, yeah, I know I'm not supposed to do that. But I thought it'd be interesting to pause and talk for just briefly, if people are willing to throw out what are the unpleasant experiences you have while sitting or at other times that you resist? So I like to say rather than let through, let be, let go, something like acknowledge, embrace, and then allow it to dissipate on its own time. Just like it might sit here with you for 10 minutes, it might disappear like smoke as soon as you become aware of it. Like it's going to do its own thing. There's no like, come on, get out of here. So actually an embrace, I think of as, you know, so we're acknowledging something, we're noticing it. And I think many people in trying to sit and do this method of no method, you know, thoughts come in, or we realize we've been caught up in thoughts, and a little part of us goes, this was like in the last mode we were talking about, intellectualizing mode, that labels it thinking. And then we just gotta go thinking. Thinking doesn't belong now. Like that, it's thinking, or even I'm not going to try to make it leave, but it's just thinking. Like it's just like it, you know, we're kind of disparaging it or something. Whereas the embrace is more like, this is part of what is going on in our life. Right here, right now. Like it's not in inside, there's no value in discriminating inside and outside. It's like I'll accept whatever's happening out there, I guess, but like inside here, no. Just this is thoughts are arising, feelings are arising, sensations are arising. This is part of your experience to embrace it and allow it to dissipate on its own time. So, yeah, what kind of things? So, just to kind of get the juices flowing, I will confess. So let's see. What do I not want to have happen on the meditation seat? I mean, it does not seem to make any sense whatsoever to allow my busy project mind. Like, what does that even mean? Like, the busy project mind would just like run away with me and run my whole life if I didn't stop it from doing that, right? So like, and that is definitely not something that, and I'll talk once we discuss kind of what we don't want to, we resist allowing, then we'll talk a little bit about, well, what does this really mean to you know, acknowledge it, to embrace it, and then to just allow it to dissipate if it is going to.
Grocery lists.
Judas said grocery lists.
I mean, they're so Not meditation material.
Not meditation material, the grocery lists. Rachel.
I get antsy, like I need to move a lot. Like if I start sitting down, it's like, no, you have to start moving somehow, some way. So you're trying to like resist moving, and it's so hard sometimes. But yeah, it's hard to embrace too.
Coral?
Yeah, something I do a lot while meditating, and it kind of drives me crazy. I don't really understand it. It's I just like process the day. I'm like reliving conversations and things that happened, and I'm not having any particular thoughts about them. It's like the day was so crazy that all I'm able to do is just I'm just like realizing what happened. And I get frustrated with it because I'm supposed to be observing these emotions and stuff, and there's no emotion there. It's just like my brain is unwinding like a ball of yarn or something after a busy day.
Ashley?
I often feel like I forget that my body is part of the experience too. Like I'll find myself getting annoyed if I'm feeling like too full or hungry or tired, or like if I have an itch or something, I'll criticize that and I'm like, oh, this is taking away from my meditation. And yeah, I just get kind of angry that I have like bodily things arise.
Thank you. Travis?
Just pivoting from meditation. When you mentioned this, I'm thinking more of, I'm coming at this more from like a DBT background. And I'm thinking a lot about like turning the mind. Not fixating on entrenched habitual patterns that are, not serving you well. And in reading this book, I've been somewhat torn, or not torn, but just to me, there seems to be some kind of tension between this kind of like blanket acceptance of the present moment and a more active, like turning of the mind, something that you're doing to like pull yourself out of it. And I don't know, I'm curious about your thoughts on that.
So once we confess the things that we want to that we don't want to embrace in meditation, then we're going to talk about that. That's great. Thanks for bringing that up. Courtney.
Boredom.
Said boredom.
The most uncomfortable thing for me in meditation is sitting there feeling very bored. Like, when is the bell going to ring? Did they forget to read it? Is anybody watching the time?
Natalie, can you come up?
Sure.
I think people have a hard time in cloud hearing.
And I'm probably not alone in this one, but fixation on physical pain. I was dealing with that one a lot today. One spot in my back. And so I'm just moving and then thinking I shouldn't be moving. But if I try to stay still, it was hurting so much. And then I was just so wrapped up in that today. So, yeah, I'm sure others go through that one.
Karen.
What I wish that I wouldn't think about when I'm meditating or any other time in during the day is worrying about choices my kids are making in their lives. And as far as, letting it in and holding it and letting it go, that actually works really well for me because I have been doing this for so many years that I am able to interrupt those thoughts and realize that this, I'm usually having a conversation. I'm usually rehearsing a future conversation. That person's not even there. And I'm able to, to realize that and just dial, I mean, realize how ridiculous that is and just, kind of go through that mental process of this is, I'm not even having a conversation. They're not here. They don't even know I'm thinking of them and just let it go. And that kind of just dials that way down. It you know, it doesn't usually clear it away completely, but I've had a lot of success with that realization that I have no, it's a control thing, I guess, that I just have no control over their lives, and just to accept the way the choices they're making, and then, you know.
Thank you. Tyler?
Yeah, one that I'm a little bit embarrassed that I get too hung up on. If I know as a rule, I don't ever, like, I don't get into discussions or arguments on, like, social media, on, like, commenting back and forth, because it's fruitless and everyone just, like, talks around each other. But if I've read something in, like, a comment section, and then I think I've got something that would, like, really get them, or, like, would really prove the point, like, I'll, like, go over these, like, fictional, like, things, and it's so frustrating because A, it's fictional, and B, you know, it's never, nothing you ever say on social media is ever like, oh, I hear your side of the story now. Okay, I, you know, I get it, or whatever. So I'll have those sorts of, like, conversations in my head, and they're really frustrating.
James?
Yeah, I only want to jump in to say all of the above. mostly the storytelling, the conversations, the ruminating on something that happened and how it could have gone a different way. And what Tyler said just now is actually what made me click the raise hand button, because I like, totally me. And it's like not just limited to Facebook, but like with my kid or with my wife or with anybody or in any situation. I could say this, I could have said this differently, I could have done this differently, and it would have made all the difference, and it wouldn't have gone south, and et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, all of the above.
Erica.
I don't know if this is just me, but sometimes I just think about sex for 20 minutes. And
All right. There's me.
Oh my God!
Someone had to say it. Natalie?
Okay, mine's not as exciting as that.
Another one, though, that I found out was happening today has to do with what else is going on in the room and what other people are doing. And I'm expecting some friends to show up. And where are they? And I'm listening for the door and I hear the door. Oh, is that Stephanie? Is that Renat? How many times is the door open? Who just came in? Or if I see people, I don't know, I might, sometimes I close my eyes. I know it's not the recommended Zen practice, but I might start paying attention to someone else's fidgeting or what they're wearing. And I feel like, is that how I want to be focusing my thoughts? And I don't know if you can speak to that, but what else is going on in the room? What are other people doing? Because that can start taking over sometimes, unless I close my eyes, but yeah.
Well, and so just before I move on to the discussion of, you know, so what is it we're doing in this practice with respect to all of this, you know, I also want to say, you know, included in this, of course, are the kinds of things that are really difficult to sit with, right? Like many of the things we're talking about are a little annoying. They're not like, I mean, I'm not really, this isn't why I'm meditating, right? But of course, there's also pain and grief and like worry. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure that there are many things that after, you know, all my years of practice could happen to me tomorrow and make sitting really like that when I would sit, that's what would be, right? Like just, you know, shock, who knows? And certainly anybody who struggles with mental health issues, then we have, you know, traumatic feelings and we have, you know, terrible memories and, you know, physical phenomena and sensations and, you know, verging on panic attack kind of things. So these are the kinds of things as well that we are saying that we're supposed to just acknowledge and embrace and allow to dissipate. So, you know, as Travis brought up, you know, there are other types of meditation. There are other practices which are more what I call directed effort practices. And there's nothing wrong with them. And there's nothing that says if you are, you know, a Zen Buddhist and you really, you know, want to do Shikantaze, really want to do silent illumination, that you should never do other kinds of meditation. And really one of the things, I'm never really good at directed effort meditation, but one of the things it is really good for is jolting that perseverating mind out of a very, 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 very negative and unhelpful spiral. So it's not that helpful to try to sit Shikantaza if, like, you just sit there and go down your rabbit hole of horror and depression, right? If sitting there makes you feel more depressed and more anxious and more horrified, then there may be some times to do something else, move the meditation beads through your hands with each breath. Or, I mean, there's even like walking meditation. There's like sutra copying meditation. There's vocal meditation. There's all kinds of different things that can kind of help break you out of something that is really disturbing. However, I mean, and it really depends on the person, but even those who do struggle with that kind of thing also find Shikantaza helpful. And I think of it almost more as like, you know, if you can just imagine you have some issue, some like some phobia or something, and you're going to overcome it by like exposure therapy. You know, you don't generally just like dump yourself into it just without any kind of relief, right? It's a gradual kind of thing. So you might, if it's very difficult, you might, you know, do some of the Shikantaza and then, you know, give yourself a relief, something, you know?
Yeah, I have a question because now that you said it, I'm like, except for the sex part, I think all the other thoughts that people shared or feelings, right, are negative. And now we were talking, okay, when it's too negative, so I'm like, I'm wondering, are any people that are having experiences that are positive during meditation and that also not supposed to? Because I don't think that I never experienced extremely positive experience. Maybe I felt very peaceful, but that's just like I felt content or something, but like not... Yeah, but with the thought will be always a thought that I'm like, why am I thinking this thought? So, yeah, I wonder.
Well, I mean, so either you're talking about like, are you just thinking like happy, pleasant thoughts?
Yeah.
And or are you talking about like a kind of a or really, even really pleasurable, blissful meditation experience?
Meaning when you are doing something that is that when your brain or your thought are in place that you are not supposed to be. So it's not the pleasant meditation experience. Okay. It's the thought like,
yeah.
Like you think about, oh, that fun thing that happened to me today.
I mean, total like, so I'm total like about... anticipation of wonderful, fun things. And like,
so it's only me.
I don't know, like that brilliant thing I said the other day, or, you know, just like, and that for me, a lot of my, where my mind goes has changed over time. So when I was first sitting, it went a lot to like self-criticism and like kind of a sense of bleakness about what the hell was life about and all that. And and comparison with other people and, you know, competitiveness. And now it's really more of like these these positive projects, all these things that I want to, creative things that I want to do, which are like the good, but like you said, like, is this, this isn't really it's what not, meditation's yeah. for, right?
Right, right. But it's so good. So that's
so regardless of what it is, it is, you know, this whole practice that we're trying to do is very, very very, very simple and basic and natural, but kind of subtle, only because like how clever our minds are at you know, leaping into all of these different modes that she's talking about. So there's I would imagine that in modern psychology now, they probably have ways that they're describing this. But for me, it's like when we realize that we've gotten caught up in something, whether it's positive or negative, painful, neutral, whatever, even a feeling of boredom, right? We're just, what we're saying inside is, I am bored. We're identifying with this experience. I am miserable. I am excited. I'm, you know, like we are, our awareness has shrunk down onto that content. And so in response, we expand our awareness, we include it, we're not doing anything to it. We're not have no agenda for it to go anywhere. We're expanding our awareness. That thing's still there, whatever it is, but now, usually our body's there too, and the room is there too, and our intention to dedicate this amount of time to being intimate with life is included. And as soon as we do that, this we change our relationship to this thing without having to, I know, and a lot of times it's simply, as people have been describing, simply becoming aware. Like Karen's probably caught up in like, you know, the rehearsing of the words to the kids. And then like at a certain point, awareness expands and like you're aware that you were just rehearsing this thing and it's not a problem anymore, right? Like the whole thing just takes care of itself. These thoughts and feelings are just, that's all they are. Sometimes they can seem like a really big deal and we don't want to allow them. But we allowing them ultimately, if we can endure it, really is the best medicine. If we can like to really just wholeheartedly like anger, right? We think allow anger and embrace anger. That sounds crazy, right? That sounds like now we're gonna like, you know, unleash it or we're gonna like nurture it or something, but to really, you know, allow ourselves to feel that and think the mean, nasty thoughts that are going through our heads and all of that, and just feel all of that is the quickest route to like seeing clearly what's going on, to disidentifying so much with exactly what that angry narrative is saying. So it's expanding that awareness and then not, the Dogen has said, the ancestor has said, essentially, as soon as you shine the light of awareness on a thought, on something, it has its own time. It does not last. Even, I was going to say, it doesn't last unless you put more energy and content into it. But in some senses, it doesn't even last then. If you were able to really trace what's going on when you put your energy into it, even then it's going to change, right? It's not going to remain the same thought, the same sensation, the same worry. Even if you kind of go into it, it's going to go down its own path. So, yes. And I was thinking of this in terms of like the kind of instructions I want to give for meditation. And I would love to keep it simple and say at the beginning of our meditation period, say, okay, for how long are you going to sit, right? So tonight we sat for half an hour. So for this half an hour, for this 30 minutes, I'm going to set aside this time and space for being intimate with life. In order to be intimate with life, you have to make peace with life. In order to make peace with life, you have to at least be able to endure it. So it's like, and I feel like this could describe kind of stages in our practice, but also like the course of one meditation period, maybe, you know, like you sit down and just kind of, at first, it's just kind of hard to endure sometimes, just physical sensations and boredom and whatever. But can we just endure it in this way and then make a certain peace with it? And then, I mean, it doesn't stop there, right? It goes on to becoming intimate with life, recognizing that this moment is boundless. This moment contains everything that we need and want to know. So it's not like just, okay, I've made peace with life, cool. I mean, there's no, it's not a process that just stops. There's always more of this intimacy to go toward. So I'm not even bothered to get on to the other aspects of the second chapter. So let's just comments or questions about this, because this seems important. Andrew.
I just wanted to add real quick that something that I think often gets left out, I think, especially when people are dealing with much more difficult stuff. And I mean, it can pertain to anything in meditation, everything that was mentioned here tonight and more, but especially when people are dealing with extremely traumatic or difficult stuff, that I think learning a sense of patience is patience is so important. Patience can also seem to suggest that there is, you know, like patience for what is there. There's not really an ending point, but still, I think sometimes the urge is to figure out what am I going to do with these thoughts? What am I going to do with these things that are bothering me during meditation? What am I going to do with all this? Sometimes it helps to just to have to remember a little bit of patience and to allow the stuff that is happening to just kind of take its own course. And you mentioned exposure therapy, a little bit at a time. When I first started working with exposure therapy, because, you know, you often hear people describe these type of things as, first I'm going to dip my toe in and then maybe my foot. I couldn't even, like, my foot would come back before my toe even got in the water, and then slowly but surely. So it's just, and I think that's what made me think about patience. And it's all going to depend on what, you know, different people are going to be working with different things in meditation. But I think patience is.
Yeah.
Because we also don't talk about patience in meditation. I think that maybe there's some value in talking about patience in meditation.
Well, I mean, patience or tolerance is one of the six perfections. Yeah. So, and I like to think of, like, also endurance, tolerance, forbearance. You know, it's like this speaking to the fact that, like, this isn't always going to be comfortable. She says this in this book a few times, like, this isn't about being, like, comfortable.
It's really not.
It's, it, you know, it's about facing our shit that is not comfortable. And if we, and quietism is basically like, you've managed to find a place that's comfortable. So you don't face your shit, because you just go over here. So yeah, that kind of, and that kind of patience, and that applies even for, you know, less dramatic experiences. It's just But it takes just like the exposure therapy might build a little at a time, like the faith in the practice has to build a little at a time. So at first you may be trying this and going like, I don't know about this. But then if you can really embrace the practice and throw yourself into it, I mean, it's very slow, but then eventually you're like, this is kind of working.
To the extent that you try to resist the thoughts, to the extent that they're going to persist.
Joan, yeah.
Well, when something comes up that's disturbing, the first thing I do is I'm kind to myself that I'm having this feeling or this emotion or these thoughts. And then I allow myself to be curious about it. Instead of pushing it away, it's like, why is this thought here? What is it trying to say to me? You know? And so I befriend it. So it's the way I relate to it, you know. And then I don't always resolve it in just one sitting, but sometimes I can get a clue of like, oh yeah, that's how I had a childhood memory, and you know, this is connected to why I'm having this feeling in the present moment. Or I get inklings, and then like right now, like I have a health problem, I have an arrhythmia, and I have a pacemaker, and so when my I'm dealing with a high heart rate, and I can and instead of us saying I'm going to fix this or I don't want this or you know, and it just living with it, you know, just saying yes, it's there, and just befriending it, you know, like, and not trying to change it, you know. It's a very different attitude, and like, you know, because I have a situation with my heart, it's like I'm thinking about the five remembrances, you know. I'm aging, and you know, you get illness, and you're eventually going to die, and you're going to have losses, and I'm playing a lot with the feelings of my own death, but I'm not pushing it away. I'm just curious about it, and it's like it, and so it keeps on coming up in my meditations, and I keep on adding more insight into it. Yeah, so it's very different.
Thank you. Yeah, that describes that process. Like Lee is talking about, we're doing this in order to become, you know, more intimate with ourselves, to know ourselves, to see how our minds and bodies work, and thereby find ways to be that cause less suffering. So I'm curious, Travis, whether that answered your question or whether you have any follow-up.
Yeah, well, I guess what it always kind of comes down to for me is that, like, I want very badly to just accept whatever it is I'm, you know, ruminating on. And then I don't ever seem to be able to do it to quite the extent that I'd prefer. And then that can send me down like a whole host of avenues that are, you know, not exactly helpful. And so I like, intellectually, this all makes complete sense to me. There's a great deal of appeal. And then it just seems like when it comes to putting it into practice, There's always some way in which I seem incapable of doing it. And yeah, that's, I mean, that kind of kills me, but that's what it is.
Well, that is the thing about, I mean, I'm probably about practice, about all kinds of meditation, but certainly our form of meditation is like, you think if you're doing it right, that like, that would be clear. Or that if you're trying hard, that like, you would get a particular kind of result, you know, be satisfying in some way. But it's like, this whole process of wrestling with our own minds is part of the practice, right? Like, this is actually really difficult to do, to be with, to really simply be with what is exactly happening to us. It's very difficult. So like, trying to do it is a Herculean task for various reasons. But all of that is part of the process, getting to know ourselves and the way our own minds work. But in terms of specifically like your, I don't know if this actually is responding to it or not, but we think about like, okay, this kind of acceptance, I guess, although as she points out, acceptance isn't at all about saying this is the way it should be, or yeah, I like it, or anything, but just this kind of like, all right, here is what is happening right now. I'm going to be with this. You know, if there's pain, if there's a sense of anger over injustice, if there's, you know, paranoia and depression, I mean, who knows? Like you cannot, if you find yourself like, you cannot accept this, you cannot just go, then you accept that, right? Like, you always can make that sphere of awareness bigger. So you can just sit there realizing, I'm just so freaking mad right now. I cannot even contemplate letting go of this anger. And that's what you are non-reactive to. So there's, you, no matter what is happening, you can always make that kind of non-reactivity bubble bigger.
That's very helpful. It really is. And it's just a reminder that it's just always, you can always move a little bit further out.
Whenever there's a sense of like kind of struggle, right?
Or not further out, is trying to get away from it, expanding
and including. Because like, it still will just be sitting there in zazen, just thinking like, this isn't what's supposed to be happening. This is what's wrong with me. Why this is, you know? And then it's just like, okay. I mean, and kind of like Joan was saying, like, you, it's almost like you, you know, in that sense of kind of befriending or being curious about, it's like we detach our sense of self from this thing. Like I'm observing somebody else's mind, right? And then there's just like, you like to waste a lot of time planning your projects while sitting there. Huh? I mean, you've heard me say this before, like, who gives a shit? It's not like, this is not a source of deep, horrible suffering, right? This is like, it may not be fit my idea about how I think good meditation is, but who cares? I care. My little small self cares. The one who wants to meditate well and wants to get insights and stuff like that. I care. So when I kind of go like, oh, look at that. I mean, that's a lesson in no self. Yes, Alice.
I've started this one thing. I'm very self-critical about my own tennis. I hate myself when I do certain mistakes, and I hate that I've been trying tennis so damn hard every day to the point of like physical pain. And I sometimes feel like I'm not going anywhere. So I get really frustrated and I cuss myself out. And I'm like totally, like if you could hear thoughts in my head, you would be like, oh my God, you need to be locked up. Like, you know, bad. And my husband knows this and several people I know this about me. And so lately I've tried to go, you know, that's not helping. So I tried to do this thing called self-compassion. And one of the exercises is really interesting, very helpful, mm-hmm. is like trying to be kind of fragmenting yourself. So if you're angry at yourself or you're angry about something, you fragment yourself, you keep that angry person there, and then you fragment yourself into a friend of yourself. So your friend goes, what's bothering you? Well, I'm really pissed off because I did this mistake. Oh, well, that's because you've been doing tennis for a long time and you feel like you're not going anywhere, right?
Yeah.
and then the anger doesn't, it like they're still angry, but they kind of quiet down a bit. And then there's a little bit of maturity that goes on. So it's kind of like being your own friend, which mm-hmm. I really like.
Everything that we need is really right here. It's a wonderful one. Thank you. All right. Offer the merit of this song, the meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. For coming, everyone.